you hear the name Borden, what do you think of? Perhaps you think of Lizzie and the awful hatchet murders of her father and stepmother. But did you know there is an even more tragic story within the family? This is the story of the Borden murder-suicide of 1848. 44 years before the murders of Andrew and Abby Borden, a tragedy took place on the same property within the same family. Directly adjacent to what is now known as the Lizzie Borden House is a building that still stands. The house where Lodwick Borden lived with his wife Elizabeth, or Eliza, and their children Maria, Eliza Ann, and Holder. Lodwick and Eliza married in 1843 and quickly began having children. Their first child, Maria, was born 1 year or less later in 1844. Their second daughter, Eliza Ann, was born 2 years after that in 1846. And their only son, Holder, was born just 1 year after that in 1847. If you're wondering how these Bordens are related to Andrew and his daughters, Lizzie and Emma Borden, Lodwick is Lizzie and Emma's great uncle. So he was Andrew's father's brother. I'm pointing this out because I want to point out another parallel. So if you notice, they kept having children until a son was born. Some speculate that Andrew Borden, so he had a total of 3 children, Emma Borden, Alice, who did not survive infancy, and then Lizzie. Some people theorize that Lizzie's middle name is Andrew, named after her father, because he never had a son. So I'm wondering if both kept trying to have children until there was a male heir. This would not be uncommon in this time period. In 1848, the year of the tragedy, Lodwick was 36 years old, Eliza Darling Borden was 36 to 37, Maria was 3 to 4 years old, Eliza Ann was 1 to 2, and Holder was less than 1 year old. The following is from the Fall River News. Melancholy affair. A most melancholy occurrence took place in Fall River Wednesday afternoon between the hours of 4 and 5. The wife of Mr. Lodwick Borden, one of our most respectable citizens residing on 2nd Street, took her 2 youngest children, went down cellar, and drowned them in a cistern, then stepping behind the chimney, cut her own throat with a razor, and died almost instantly. No one was present at the time, the servant girl having just stepped out to draw a pail of water, leaving Mrs. B., with her 3 youngest children. One of the children drowned was 6 months old. Mrs. Borden had appeared rather melancholy for a few days past, and it is probable that she committed the lamentable deed in a paroxysm of insanity. The following is from the Brooklyn Evening Star, May 6, 1848. Sad affair. Mrs. Borden of Fall River, Mass., on the evening of the 3rd, drowned her 2 children and cut her own throat. The mother was found in her last moments in the cellar. The following is from the Lancaster Examiner, May 10th, 1848. A sad affair took place at Fall River on the 3rd. A Mrs. Borden, while laboring under a strange hallucination, drowned her 2 babes. One 3 years, and the other 1 year old, and then cut her own throat. The following is from the Poughkeepsie Journal, May 13th, 1848. A distressing occurrence took place at Fall River on Wednesday last. The wife of Mr. Lodwick Borden, during a temporary estrangement of mind, drowned her 2 children in a cistern in the cellar of her house, and then cut her throat. Her husband was in good circumstances, but she had been heard to express fears of her children coming to want. The following is from the Boston Traveler. Tragical event. One of the most deplorable events that has happened in this part of the country for many years occurred at Fall River last evening. The wife of Mr. Lodwick Borden, an estimable inhabitant of that town, drowned her two youngest children, one 3.5 years and the other 1 year old, in a cistern, and then took her own life. Mrs. Borden has within a few days shown undeniable evidences of an unsound mind, expressing fears that they should come to want, though her husband is in good circumstances. Yesterday afternoon, a girl who lived with Mrs. Borden went out to get a pail of water. On her return, Mrs. Borden and the two younger children were missing. She asked an elder child where her mother was gone, and was told that she had gone to the cellar. She went to the cellar door, but was afraid to enter on hearing the groans of Mrs. B. The neighbors were called in and found Mrs. B extended on the floor with her throat cut and just alive. The children were both dead in the cistern. This dreadful tragedy has caused a great excitement in Fall River, and a deep sympathy is felt for Mr. Borden in this sudden and dreadful bereavement. Maria was the only one to survive, losing her mother and her siblings at just 4 years old. So this case is obviously very, very tragic. And from reading the articles, it seems like she was suffering from postpartum psychosis. And she hallucinated and unfortunately killed two of her children. And then herself. I found this helpful academic article called Postpartum Psychosis by Sahar Raza and Syed Raza. It is on NIH.gov. Childbirth is considered a major physical, emotional, and social stressor in a woman's life. Following days to weeks after childbirth, most women experience some mental disturbance like mood swings and mild depression, also known as post-baby blues. But a few can also suffer from PTSD, major depression, or even full-blown psychosis. This change in maternal behavior and thought process is due to several biopsychosocial factors. There are physical and hormonal changes, lack of sleep and exhaustion, and the beginning of a new role and commitment in caring for a newborn, which is both physically and emotionally challenging. Postpartum psychosis is the severest form of mental illness in that category, characterized by extreme confusion, loss of touch with reality, paranoia, delusions, disorganized thought process, and hallucinations. It affects around 1 to 2 per 1,000 females of childbearing age and usually happens immediately within days to the first 6 weeks after birth. Although rare, it is considered a psychiatric emergency that warrants immediate medical and psychiatric attention and hospitalization if the risk of suicide or filicide exists. What's really tragic is that this still goes on today. Women's health is not taken seriously. And this is still happening where women are going into postpartum psychosis and harming their children and themselves. Honestly, mental health care and women's health care in this country is a complete joke. And it's just tragic that this happened and tragic that this continues to happen today. Even if you've heard this lesser-known story before, not many take it much further than the events of that day. I've been researching the family history, and here is what I found interesting. Not many are aware that Eliza was married before and had 3 children from this marriage. On December 1st, 1830, Elizabeth or Eliza Hathaway married Silas Gilson Darling. In 1832, they had their first child, a son, named Silas Gilson Darling Jr. On March 24th, 1833, they welcomed their second son, William Wallace Darling. In 1835, they had a third son named George Washington Darling. So within 3 years, Eliza gave birth to 3 children. In postpartum depression and psychosis, with each pregnancy and childbirth, the symptoms of postpartum depression gets worse, and the greater risk you are of developing psychosis. You are also at a greater risk for developing postpartum depression and psychosis if you give birth in rapid succession. It does not allow the body to adjust to all the hormone levels elevating and dropping suddenly with childbirth. You're also at a greater risk if there is a personal and/or family history of mental illness and trauma. Unfortunately, on January 4th, 1840, George Washington Darling passed away when he was just 4 to 5 years old. And on November 5th, 1840, Eliza's husband, Silas Darling, passed away at 33 years old. And on the very next day, November 6, 1840, Silas Jr. passed away at 7 to 8 years old. Eliza lost her husband and two of her children in the same year, her husband and her oldest child, back to back. I was having trouble finding her husband's cause of death, but now that I see Silas Jr. died the day before, I think it's safe to assume it was from a contagious illness like consumption. Eliza was about 29 years old at the time of their deaths, and the surviving son, William, was 7 years old. I'm turning 29 this year, and I have experienced loss before with my father and brother, but I cannot imagine losing my husband and children so young. I'll often hear people say, "Oh, it was not uncommon for children to die back then." I think this takes away the grief that was still felt by the family. If you've ever lost a loved one or multiple loved ones, it's never something you get used to. And Victorians especially were very dedicated to mourning, not this 3 days off from work capitalistic hellscape practice we have in the U.S. today. Fortunately, William Wallace Darling lived to be 79 years, 20 months, and 1 day, as one newspaper put it, passing away in 1913. As an interesting aside, William's son-in-law was a manager at Mellon House in Fall River, a hotel that is now a parking lot, and he fell 5 stories down an elevator shaft to his death. Some people will say that Fall River is cursed, and so is anyone in the Borden family, even if they marry into it, but I have no official stance on the curse theory. So back to Eliza. 3 years after the deaths of her husband and her 2 children, she married Lodwick Borden. As a single Victorian mother, she must have felt pressured to find a new husband to help raise her family and keep herself financially stable. And as we know, they quickly began having children. Maria in 1844, Eliza Ann in 1846, and Holder in 1847. So another set of 3 children in rapid succession. 3 children in 3 years, again. Only 1 child survives, again. This time with the horrible murder-suicide. Some interesting parallels here. I was unable to find if Eliza and Lodwick married for love or convenience. Lodwick did have a previous marriage to Maria Briggs Borden 10 years earlier, but she passed away in 1838, 10 years before his second wife. So again, more parallels. They did have 2 children, Maria Borden, who was born and died in 1834, and Matthew Borden, who was born and died in 1836. He lost his wife 2 years later. Perhaps he felt that he needed a new wife to have an heir. Another parallel is Maria Briggs Borden and Eliza Darling Borden both passed away within 5 years of being married to Lodwick. Only 1 year after the deaths of Eliza Darling and 2 more of his children, Lodwick married another Eliza, Eliza T. Chase, in 1849. She passed away in 1863 at age 50. On her death record, it lists her address as 68 Second Street, which was the original address of the home where the murder-suicide happened. Clearly, Lodwick was a true Borden man and was very practical. He married again just over a year later on October 20th, 1864, to Ruhama Crocker. He was 52 years old and she was 50. He passed away 10 years later in 1874, and she passed away 5 years after that in 1879. So a total of 4 wives in his life. Let's get back to Eliza Darling and Lodwick Borden's child who survived, Maria Borden. In 1866, Maria married Captain Samuel B. Hinckley. She was 22 and he was 34. He was in the 58th Massachusetts Infantry as well as the 3rd. He was a Civil War veteran in the Union Army. He did have a daughter, but it was not with his first wife, Maria. I was unable to find any information on their divorce, but he and his family lived and died in California. So at some point he moved away from Fall River after the divorce. He quit his job in Fall River in 1868, so maybe that was when the marriage ended. In 1882, he came back to Fall River from California to visit old friends and brought, quote, oranges and a box of raisins of his own culture, end quote. I just thought that was entertaining. He came from California, and they thought that oranges and a box of raisins was a great gesture of a Californian culture. Maria married again 7 years later in 1873 to John B. Chase. They welcomed their first child in 1874, Lodwick B. Chase, named after her father, who unfortunately died at just 2 months old. 2 months after his death, they had a daughter, Emma Chase, who lived to be 77. She had a son, Borden Chase Goulding, who died in 2000. There are likely descendants who are still alive today because Maria was spared. Maria, the girl who lived, passed away in 1909 at age 64. The following is from the Fall River Daily Evening News, June 17, 1909. Death of Mrs. John B. Chase. Mrs. Maria Borden Chase, wife of John B. Chase, died Wednesday morning at her home, number 517 Middle Street, after an illness of a year and a half, age 65 years. She was the daughter of the late Lodwick and Eliza Hathaway Borden. Despite her long illness, Mrs. Chase bore up bravely under the ordeal, and never one word of complaint was uttered by her. Her death will be a matter of sincere regret among her many acquaintances, with whom she was a great favorite, besides her husband, John B. Chase, who is a music teacher. The deceased is survived by one daughter, Miss Emma L. Chase. I personally think it makes sense that she wasn't a complainer, and she was known to not be a complainer. That woman went through hell in her life. Today, 68 Second Street, the site of the Borden murder-suicide, is now 242 Second Street and is home to Miss Lizzie's Coffee. I spoke to the owner and he was not aware of the murder-suicide when he purchased the property. He just wanted to have a Lizzie Borden-themed coffee shop right next to the site of the 1892 hatchet murders of Andrew and Abby Borden. Much to the chagrin of the current owner of the Lizzie Borden house. There is a reason I don't go to the house anymore. The owner literally tried to sue the coffee shop, a small business, essentially claiming that he owns Lizzie Borden. No one owns history. No one owns a human being. And the judge agreed. Lizzie Borden is not a brand name. That is a human being. She didn't even live there after the trial, so I'm not sure why they even call it the Lizzie Borden House. That was Andrew Borden's house, and before that it was the Charles Trafton House, so that doesn't make any sense. The owner of Miss Lizzie's didn't realize it was haunted until he was setting up, and he started hearing babies crying. Now he calls it the most haunted coffee shop in the world. On my last visit, the owner actually let my friend and I, a fellow paranormal investigator, Tim Weisberg, investigate the basement. We were down there for over 3 hours, and it was active the entire time. Our goal was to communicate respectfully with whoever may be down there. It was probably the most intense investigation I've ever done. We mostly use the Estes method, which, if you're not familiar, is when you are listening to a spirit box with noise-canceling headphones and a blindfold. The other person then can ask questions. While I was under, Tim was able to have them turn on and off the REM pod, as well as the lights in the room. Now, I'm not a big REM pod believer. I'll sometimes place them between doorways, but if you say, "Can you turn it off, please?" and immediately it turns off, then perhaps it is a spirit walking away from it. Each time I went under the Estes method, it felt more like I was there on the day of the murder-suicide. And I would never make something like this up. I'm just explaining what it felt like. I literally heard splashes, an exasperated woman, and a priest giving a passionate sermon, is how I would describe that. It felt like I was there when it happened and during the discovery, as well as the funeral, if that makes sense. Some examples here, I heard a woman say, "Hold, hold," repeatedly. Tim and I later realized that could be a nickname for Holder. I heard a man say, "Pull him up," which could reference pulling the children out of the cistern. I heard, "You're in a grave," when Tim was standing on the spot where the cistern used to be, and I was sitting in the spot where Eliza is said to have slit her own throat. I kept wanting to say, "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" and, "Are you here? Are you here? Are you here?" It felt like a woman was looking for Maria. I heard a woman who was exasperated, like I said, saying things like, "If he took me seriously," that kept getting interrupted by the priest giving a sermon. What I pictured in my head was Eliza was watching her own funeral and the funerals of her children, screaming about what really happened, but no one could see or hear her. It was honestly disturbing. I'm not saying this is what really happened back then, but this is what it felt like to be investigating down there. Now, the owner let us down there because Tim is on the radio and I have given them exposure on social media. I don't think he's letting just anyone investigate down there. I don't mean that in like a gatekeepy way. I just don't want people to start harassing the owner to get into the basement. I think the last thing we want to happen is to have another set of Borden murders and spirits being exploited. My purpose with the investigation was to give a voice to the voiceless, to talk to anyone who may want to talk. Just like the purpose of this episode is to tell their story, because their story deserves to be told. Women have been bleeding out to have children since the beginning of time. Why is it that it's only after a woman has bled out on the floor and her children are dead that her complaints are taken seriously? If you are having thoughts of harming yourself or others, please seek emergency medical attention. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I know I went in with the details here on the research, but I really can't help myself. If there is any detail in the story, I want it. I literally woke up at 4 a.m. every day this weekend just because I kept thinking about the case and I just wanted to find as much as possible that I could. And a lot of this, a lot of people haven't talked about. I do really recommend checking out the coffee shop. You know, it's a Lizzie Borden themed coffee shop. It's really cute. It's not like he's saying, you know, hey everybody, a murder suicide happened here. It's a Lizzie Borden themed coffee shop. And there's specialty drinks, there's Lizzie Borden cutout that you can take a picture with. It's they even have a latte or coffee named the Maplecroft, which I think Lizbeth would appreciate. I recently got one that had pistachio in it called the Lucky Lizzie. That was for St. Patrick's Day. It was very delicious, though I do think there should be a Bridget Sullivan themed drink because Bridget Sullivan is the Irish person in the Lizzie Borden story. But yeah, that's the episode. I again hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to leave them on the Axe Murder Diaries Instagram page. And I hope you keep listening.